Good evening. I'm absolutely the person who's least qualified to be standing up here and talking tonight, except that my mother died of Alzheimer's. And like many of us, when something touches your life, then you often get involved in something that you would never imagine would be something you'd be involved in, and that's what happened to me. As a result of that, I set two balls rolling once I felt that actually, A, my mother didn't need me anymore because clearly she died, but more importantly, my mother didn't need me when she was alive. It was my father who needed me because my mother was looked after by my father, and it was my father that needed looking after by somebody else. So it was actually when my father didn't need me that I had time to do something about dementia, or to try to do something. So I set two balls rolling, one of which was to work with a friend to try and capture lessons from carers about how to help care for your loved ones better. And we're hoping to publish that as a book. And then the second thing is something called the Evington Initiative, which, as was said earlier, it was a group of business people who've got together. All of us have got parents who've either died of vascular dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever, and who really cared about trying to make a difference. And what's happened as a result of that is we tried to make the business case to raise money, because as you've just seen, there's proportionately very little money raised and being spent on research into dementia. What we learnt was that it's actually much more complicated than that, because the drug trials, as many as you will have seen, are about to fail, and they did then fail. And actually, it isn't clear whether or not the scientists really do know what causes dementia. And it looks as if either we don't know at all what makes the neurons die, or the drugs that have all been administered are being administered way too late, and to work, they have to be administered a lot earlier. So we are 10 to 20, possibly 30 years away from a cure, probably, is what I've learned. And so the imperative to get behind finding a cure is, it just couldn't be bigger, because if it is 10, 20, 30 years away, every day we delay means it's longer for all those people coming down the track. And, you know, that awful figure, 1 in 3 people in their 50s are going to have some form of dementia. So, but tonight, I wasn't asked to talk about all of that. I was asked to talk about my perspective as a family member, and I've not done that before, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it, actually. And I've only realised in being in the room that I don't know if I can do it. So forgive me if this ends up being a bit emotional. When you say a member, a perspective from a family member, what you say is, you know, some of the things I'm going to say tonight, 1 in 3 of you might have this experience that my mother had. But worse than that, in some ways, it's not obvious to me whether it's better to have dementia or to have your husband and wife or wife have dementia. So not only might this affect you, but this might affect your loved one. So 1 in 3 might get it. 1 in 3 might be caring for somebody with this. And I thought, to give a perspective, what I should do is to say, actually, that perspective comes from some vignettes. Lots of people tell whole stories about their loved ones. I thought what I would do is give you some vignettes, partly from my father, partly from my brother, or my vignettes for my brother, partly from me, and then to finish from my son and his cousins. So, for my father, just some things to, give you a flavour of what this journey is all about. The very first thing that he would say when he really had to face it was, my mother was asked to become the ladies' captain for the golf club, and he had to persuade her not to, because he knew she wouldn't cope with the complexity of running the local golf club. He then would tell you that he started to watch his wife enter a daydream where he began to lose her as a presence in his life. She'd always been very active, very sharp. And suddenly that active, sharp, vibrant woman started to become a shadow of that. And he described it as her entering a daydream. Then, this is not particularly chronologically, but then imagine never, ever being able to leave home. They could never, ever go on holiday or come and stay with us, because my mother couldn't cope being in an environment that wasn't one she knew. So he never left home for several years. They lost all their friends. People crossed the street not to talk to them when they walked into their local town, because people can't cope with it. They had four couples who stayed with them through the whole journey. My mother's best friend stopped coming to see her. My mother went into hospital to have a hip operation. The hospital, actually a private hospital, phoned my father at 3 o'clock in the morning and asked him to come into the hospital because they could not cope with my mother. So at 78 years old, or whatever he was then, 76 maybe, getting in his car, driving 45 minutes in the middle of the night, having been told by a hospital that they could not cope with one of their patients. Another occasion, driving to hospital and finding my mother in the car park of the hospital in her nightie with nothing else on. The hospital had lost her some hours earlier. Every day in the last couple of years, it took him an hour to persuade her to get dressed. It took him an hour to persuade her to get in the shower and to shower her. For some reason, people with Alzheimer's hate water. And it took him an hour at the end of the day to persuade her to get undressed and get her into bed. He spent a lot of that time with my mother wasn't a very aggressive Alzheimer's person, but she was cross with him a lot of the time because she thought he was not telling her things or cheating her or, you know, lying because life didn't make sense. So the person he adored was cross with him a great deal of the time. Lying in bed at night, grieving for having lost her, because although she was in the bedroom next door, because it's not really possible to sleep together, he had lost his lifelong partner. So he went through 2 years of grieving before she finally died, and he then started all over again. And for the last 2 years, he didn't ever sleep through the night. And in the last year, he was up 2 to 3 times a night. By that stage, my mother was incontinent. And then before she was finally taken into hospital, he watched her battle for half an hour to let the ambulance men take her into an ambulance because she was so terrified that she was being taken away by people she didn't know. So those are just some of the things that, you know, this thing means. For me, I lost my best friend. She used to be the person I told everything to and always had brilliant advice. And by the end, when I went to visit her for the last 3 months, she was in a brilliant centre. She would actually recognise me when I walked in. She would beam and she would say, her first words were always, "Hello, how's your mother?" So I lost my friend. I found it really hard in the early stages until it was so bad that you can't do anything at all, that she could never say she had Alzheimer's. For a lot of people, it's just too hard. So the denial is the way that people cope. But that means that you lose your friend early because you can't talk to them because they won't tell you what's going on. So you can't even help with somebody maybe in pain. You can be sympathetic. But when somebody won't engage with you about what's happening, it's really, really tough. And then a day when finally my father, after my mother had battled for half an hour to get put in an ambulance, and finally a doctor in a hospital said, "Oh my God, is nobody doing anything about this? Is nobody helping this man?" The social services appeared, and my father finally, because he had also been saying, "I can cope," my father finally said, "I can't cope." And I spent a day visiting care homes, some of whom, you know, we saw some great things tonight, some of which, you know, the idea that that be where your loved one would end up, just grim beyond words, some of which were lovely, but being persuaded by a brilliant woman at one of the nursing homes that probably what would happen is that she would go to a nursing home and because she would really fight not to be with my father, she would then be sectioned and committed, what used to be called committed, and go to a hospital unit. And so ringing up the geriatric psychiatrist and persuading him to section my mother, and that meant that actually my mum could go and get the care she needed. So my brother, absolutely furious in the early stages that my mother was keeping my father prisoner because she wouldn't let him go out of her sight. And we did go and see an amazing doctor who said, think toddler, a small child won't let go of their mother's skirt. And that's what somebody with dementia feels about their principal carer. Don't be cross with her. She's not keeping him prisoner. She needs him, just like a tiny child needs their mother. We had to decide what we would do if anything happened to my father. So we both had to give up every other weekend. Both of us worked. So we agreed that every other weekend we would be with them. And finally, my son, because you've then got the grandchildren who adore their grandmother, and gradually she slips away because that engagement just can't happen. And finally, my son turning to me one day, and you know, his nieces could have said the same thing, and he said, aged about 10, 11, maybe a little bit older, "Mummy, I don't think I want to see Nana anymore because I'm losing all my good memories of her." So that, I know, everybody who's been through this will have those kind of vignettes, but it is grim. And the carers and the help that comes makes it all better and manageable, but that's why it is so important to do the research, because ultimately we have to find a way to help people not to have this disease. So I would say, coming back from the family perspective to the big perspective, although James said it's looking good on the research, I think that's a very sunny view. I think the pharma companies need persuading back in. I think the Prime Minister's initiative is brilliant. We've got Obama doing a similar thing in America. But it's looking a tiny bit better than it did earlier this year. It's not looking good yet, and we need to make it look good. Because if we're not going to do that, we need to get, in my view, very engaged with assisted dying. And in terms of the short term, we really need to get so much better, not only at helping people in care homes care for people better, and I think that's coming, but also helping when people are in these early stages and they go to the doctor for diagnosis, for helping the carers and the families in those early stages. I saw a clip on TV about, my dementia, a few months ago, very late at night, of an old man. And the beginning of the clip was him saying, the terrible thing is that I've been married to her since we were, you know, both 20, and now she doesn't know who I am. So when I try to undress her at night, she feels I'm a dirty old man, you know, sort of trying to rape her. And you imagine that every night, because my dad just had to persuade my mum to get undressed. She didn't think he was trying to rape her. And then he went on to say, he said, but actually the very worst thing about this whole journey was when she was diagnosed. Because we went to the doctor, and the doctor said, yes, I can confirm that the diagnosis is Alzheimer's. And he said, so what happens now? And the doctor said, well, we'll see you in 6 months. And he said, that was the cruelest thing anybody ever said to me. Thank you.